gentlemen, we are experiencing technical difficulties. Please stand by.
The original alternate here at F4WOnline.com. It is the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare.
You can't imagine how much fun we're having. Stop it there without a care to what you got to fear. Keep it all between your beer and your hockey hair.
Turn your radio up.
I can't believe that there's a nightmare on my street.
Big in Japan.
Hey, Adam.
Yes, Mike.
Do we give each other a special gold star or anything like that because we've done a show now 3 weeks in a row?
Yeah, I was going to go the Barry Horowitz pat myself
pat
on the back.
Pat on the back. We could play the Action Bronson song in the background.
Bit of a self high five as well, maybe occurring.
And then remix that into the cheap ripoff opening DDP had, which remixes into our cheap opening, which is not cheap. And we are so thankful to Mr. Canada for that.
Yes, yes. That opening is just about going 10 years strong, right?
Yes, it is.
Because I don't know how – we definitely didn't have that opening when we first started the show because we had the I believe it was the heartbeat sound that was one of the sounds you could use in Hot Recorder.
Yes.
That was our open – if you go back and listen to the archives from way back, which you can actually go back and listen to the archives.
It wasn't as creepy as like that RF video opening with like the hot breath and Rob like lusting after something that's probably – never mind. But – it was creepy.
Yes, it definitely was. If you go back and listen to those, and I guess by the way, Mike, is this a free show?
It might as well be.
Okay, so this is a free show.
How can
show,
we charge
so
the people for this?
I won't do what you and Brian do every day on Wrestling Observer Live, which is basically 42 minutes of telling people to subscribe to the website and then taking a few creepy phone calls. But yes, if you if you enjoy this show, A, what's wrong with you, and B, there are literally hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of episodes of you and I, Mike, doing this show going all the way back to March of 2006, basically covering Japanese pro wrestling in depth when really no one else was. So, yeah, that is that's what you can do with your money if you what you can get for your money, I should say, if you do end up subscribing.
We were also fathering babies and talking about it on our radio show far before some other people were.
Although I was a little late to the cat party, so there's that. My cat is not laying as of right now between my keyboard and my monitor as she was doing last week.
No, so she's just outside the door screaming, crying. Like,
no, the door is open to hopefully avoid such things. But in any event, this is a free show, and also this is a – we were going to record this about 2.5 hours ago, but Mike was sleeping, show. This will be an express edition of the Big Audio Nightmare, probably about a half hour long, so keep that in mind.
Yes. Now, a bunch of things have probably already been talked to death as we've gotten the fallout from the Tokyo Dome show and New Year's
by
Dash.
Us, we talked about the Tokyo Dome last week.
Yep. We you know, kind of went through that. We everything is standing still right now as far as the guys jumping over to WWE. We just got to kind of wait and see what happens. The Royal Rumble is coming up this weekend, so if they're going to do something, I guess the only real news from last week of any real note coming out of all of that stuff was the fact that WWE may have licensed what is it called? Subconscious.
Yeah, I believe so. Shinsuke Nakamura theme.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens there. But everything's kind of in a holding pattern, at least as we do this show today.
There was a little bit of news today, Mike. I don't if news is maybe too strong of a word, mm-hmm. but interesting in the sense that for the opening of the New Japan Fantastica Mania tour, Shinsuke Nakamura came out with the IWGP Intercontinental title both for the match and for his backstage interview after the match.
Did he drop it in a trash can?
He did not.
Did
he pour
Coors Light all over it?
Well, that may have happened, but he was not seen hanging out with Medusa in a monster truck. So,
Are they going to have monster trucks for her relationship with Shimmer or with Stardom?
Who, Medusa?
Can you imagine a Kari Hojo monster truck?
I could, actually.
I don't know exactly what they're going to do, obviously. Maybe they have a ceremony where he hands over the IC title before he gets laid to waste by Omega or something like that. But it's hard for me to believe that they're not going to do something to stamp out Nakamura in the same way that they stamped out AJ Styles a couple of weeks ago. But
And also one would expect with Gallows and Anderson pretty much definitely losing their rematch bid for the tag titles coming up at the big pay-per-view in February for New Japan. So I guess this does sort of kind of cover a little bit of I asked for questions on the @AdamMikeBan Twitter account. That's the Twitter account for the show, and a few people did. What's
that? What is that handle? We haven't used it in so long, I forgot.
It's @AdamMikeBan, as in Big Audio Nightmare. So @AdamMikeBan. And got a few questions in. One of them was from Alan Sneddon, @AlanSneddon, who said, how badly do you fear for AJ, Nakamura, Gallows, and Anderson creatively on WWE's main roster? Alan says, I'm convinced they'll screw them up. I would tend to agree with you, Alan. I'm trying to be optimistic about this. I'm not all that concerned one way or the other about if they screw Gallows and Anderson up. I could very easily see them fitting in fairly well in the tag scene in WWE with the likes of, you know, the New Day and the Usos and Kalisto and Sin Cara. So, I mean, if that should be pretty easy to plug and play. AJ, obviously he's great, but do they want him to be great? You know, are they signing him to be great, or are they just signing him for no one else to have him? And then as we talked about last week in some pretty great detail, Mike, the Nakamura. I mean, that obviously is the biggest question. Do they see Shinsuke Nakamura as, you know, Hideo Itami, as Yoshitatsu, or do they see him as an actual Japanese wrestler who can be a star top main event guy on the roster? Are they signing him for that reason, or are they signing him just to have him on the roster and then have him be, you know, the key to the WWE network in Japan, which is sort of basically launching in tandem with him most likely being brought in? So it's I usually err on the side of assuming they're going to screw things up, but I guess considering what they've done with guys like Kevin Steen, you know, there is hope, I guess would be the way I'd say it, but I'm
exactly. That's what 2016 is all about. It is all about new hope for New Japan, for WWE, for these guys' careers.
For TNA?
For TNA, because they got a miracle.
Let's be realistic.
They got a miracle and a girl in short shorts. So there could be worse things in the world than that. So see, everything, hope springs eternal. And hey, Styles does not speak in the way that they would probably like a guy to speak. Nakamura speaks in a language that they'd rather not have a guy speak. I don't know what exactly his English is like as far as doing promos or anything like that, but since they're not big on managers, you just have to...
Yeah, people say it's better than we would expect.
Oh, hey, look, I would just assume, you know, none. So for anything is going to be a little bit of a step up there. But you start,
It makes me want to have a Shinsuke Nakamura Artemi Panarin tag team, which is basically really it's the key to this show, Japanese wrestling and hockey.
I have Panarin on my team with Dennis Gorman.
I was going to say, you definitely don't have him on your team in my league, because I picked him up.
God, I think that's the reason I picked him up in mine, and I'm still losing horribly to Helmy. It's just the worst, but that's not important right now. What is important is hope springing eternal. And like you said, with Gallows and Anderson, you know, they could stay in NXT, you know, forever. It'd just be, you know, player coaches there. But would I have them up on the main roster? Sure. Do I expect as much for them as I do out of the other two? I don't. But there's opportunity for them there because the tag team division is not something that stays focused on, and if they're going to be...
But it's been more focused, it seems like, lately. In my sort of re-entry into trying to watch WWE, there's some semblance of a tag division. Like, I look at those four, and I almost think that granted, maybe because the expectation isn't for them to be main eventers, but I almost think that Gallows and Anderson are the most likely to kind of get the push that their talent says they should probably get.
Oh, hey, the opportunity's there. I mean, we talk about New Japan's, you know, churn of the same tag teams over and over and over again in both the heavyweight and junior heavyweight division. WWE is like that, too. I mean, you do have the New Day. But outside of that, you have Kalisto and Sin Cara, who's now injured, and you got Kalisto out on his own. And then what do you have? You have the Usos, and one of them was out for a long time, and you basically have the same churning tag teams over and over again there, too. So, I mean, there is opportunity for them because there's just not a whole lot of tag teams, and the Dudleys.
Yeah, well, you got the Dudleys, and I could see that being a ready-made feud.
Oh, sure, and you know what? The Dudleys should be there to put Anderson and Gallows over. I know a lot of people were wondering what they were doing being back, but, I mean, to me, the Dudleys were doing exactly what I would want them to do being back, which is put over some of these other teams, especially in the case of the New Day. I mean, they tried for the belts. They didn't get them. Good. Now they move on to somebody else and put them over. I mean, that should kind of be how things go. Now, when it comes to AJ Styles and Nakamura on the main roster, we'll just have to see what happens. You know, Nakamura's wrestling. Both of their wrestling abilities are enough to overcome everything else, and they're going to have their opportunities in spots like Cesaro has and like Owens has, where you just really remember how good these guys are. But they're going to be probably neutered versions of themselves. And with AJ, the one thing I worry about is, of all the things, and this may sound really stupid, is his height, how he looks. Obviously, his age plays into that, and the fact that he is not Mr. Promo or anything like that. I mean, he came in a good spot on the heels of Finn Balor, and he lived up to everything that they wanted him to. In the ring, he was one of the best in the world. On the mic, he held his own over in New Japan. Is he going to be able to do that in WWE? We'll have to see. I hope so. We'll see what happens. But, you know, again, hope springs eternal. Until something actually happens, there's no reason to be negative about things.
Wow. A ray of sunshine.
Can you believe this? See, 2016 has been good to me so far.
It's just because you're spending more time on the virtual airwaves with me, which is understandable.
Which, speaking of guys that have been signed from Japan and end up in the WWE system, you went to NXT, at least one of the two shows in Chicago.
Yes, the matinee show.
Why we didn't do a show on Saturday, because you were out gallivanting about with Adam Pearce and everybody else that you knew from back in the day. Now, which show did you go to?
The afternoon, the matinee show.
Did you see Dr. Keith?
I did not. Dr. Keith was at the evening
show. Oh, that son of a bitch. Okay.
Yes, but we both apparently had similar experiences you're, with the building, which was
With the building, I thought you were both doing something with AEW.
No.
By the way, show coming up soon.
Yes, and I believe they had a very good show just last week as well. It was interesting. The doors were supposed to open at 11:30. It was 1 p.m. bell time. It was at the Portage Theater on Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago. It was one of the few of those type of venues that I've never been to, like for a concert or anything. It was kind of a disaster. I mean, not talking about the show itself, but just the whole deal. Like I said, the doors were supposed to open at 11:30. It was freezing cold, even by Chicago standards. And 11:30 came. What's that?
It's snowing.
It was not snowing. I think it was too cold to snow. Pretty sure. 11:30 came and went. Doors remained closed. Noon came and went. Still no doors open. By this time, wrestling fans were being wrestling fans, which is not a good thing for anyone. Lots of stupid chanting and I don't know. I shouldn't be so negative on wrestling fans because I am one, but it was
look at that you harshing the vibe.
at that point, the general state of the line waiting to get into the building was probably as much of an aggravation as the cold itself. Yeah, but
at Robert Baca 360 was texting Brian and I during the show, and he freezing my butt in 4-block line for NXT Chicago. Show starts in 5 minutes. Don't think they opened on time.
They definitely his thought is correct. They definitely did not open on time. It was like I said, 12:30 came and went. Around, I want to say 12:30 or so, there was a bit of a commotion, and out came Prince Devitt himself. I assume that – I suppose I should call him Finn Balor, but, you know, I call him Prince Devitt. He came out and apologized to the crowd for the problems they were having inside of the building and decided to walk through the entire line and too sweet to everyone who wanted to get in on that action.
Did he really do his entrance crawling outside to see the people?
He did not. Maybe. I didn't see that. I was a little bit further back in line. I was not real far back, but he did come out and address the crowd. There's, I think I actually, through the Adam Mike Band Twitter account, I retweeted a few of the videos people took of him addressing the crowd, and that was cool. That kind of kept everyone at bay.
Did he give you a big hug and say, you gave me 5 stars before anybody else?
No. I'm actually usually really good in those situations, like meeting hockey players or having met a ton of wrestlers back in the IWA days. But I was a little bit starstruck. I won't deny that. I just kind of didn't really expect it because there was really no commotion beforehand. And I just turned around and, oh, there's Prince Devitt like 3 feet away. So I just kind of stood there. I was like, oh, that's cool. But yeah, we finally got in, I want to say around 12:45, in which case Devitt busted through the line and stood on the merch table and informed everyone that there are Balor Club t-shirts for sale. So he was very active before the show.
You got to hawk your wares, okay? They're giving you a percentage. That means it's there's a percentage on you to get up and still sell.
Hell yeah.
Don't know when they don't work the indies and they're out there. You got to hawk your wares, son.
Yes,
do it now unless you're going to end up like Ricky Morton in 60 by this picture of me and Robert Bubba.
Yes, he was definitely hustling, and that's definitely a good thing. So you funnel your way into the building, and it was a very strange setup for a professional wrestling show. First off, not as strange as the anyone who's listened to the show for a long time has heard me describe the IWA show in Herrin, Illinois, that I went to years and years ago, where it was literally on a stage. It was in a small theater. There was a stage. The ring was on the stage, which was elevated from the audience, which is a better way to call it than the crowd. They actually, at that show, didn't sell the first several rows of seats because you couldn't see over the edge of the stage to actually see the ring. This wasn't quite that bad, but it was still pretty weird. You had, the entranceway, and then you had seats on the other three sides, but the ring was on this weird sort of slant because of the way the floor was. I assume it's the venue screwed up the numbering of the seats. I don't know if they just had their own numbers on the seats and it didn't match with what the numbering was for the tickets that WWE sold. So you had a ton of issues with that. There were no ushers there to help people find their seats.
Why didn't they just call Keith and book Bourbon Place?
You can make – there's a lot of questions about that. I mean, why didn't they just run the Odeon in Villa Park or the UIC Pavilion? I mean, yeah. You sold out several thousand people. I'd say probably a good 1,500 people for each show. The show I was at, the afternoon show, which is the second show as far as the order of when they went on sale, was sold out, packed to the max. There were standing room only lining the walls of the building all around. So they clearly could have booked bigger venues. I really don't know how they got hooked up with this place, but they were not – the Portage Theater clearly was not prepared for a crowd of this size or just for this type of show in general. The heat was not working, so it was every bit as cold inside as it was outside, even with well over 1,000 people inside. So everyone's still huddled in this building with their jackets, their winter hats. Couldn't feel my toes. So it was a little – it was –
Were they at least selling booze so people could get artificially warm?
I'm sure they were. I don't drink, so I didn't really even bother looking.
Well,
but
usually it's people like you that can point out very quickly the other people that are drinking.
Oh, I'm very good at that, yeah. I couldn't tell. I didn't really – if there were – I mean there was only maybe 20 minutes between when they let us in and when the show started, so there wasn't a whole lot of time for people
to – nobody was being
a
D-bag, okay.
What's that?
Nobody was being a D-bag.
Well, I don't know about that. It was the crowd. Oh, my God. I felt like I felt like I might as well have been. There were times where I felt like I might as well have been in the like the impact zone.
See, you're
back
stepping
in the day.
You're stepping into dangerous territory there. You know, there are those pro chant people and very pro NXT type of crappy. Hey. And remember something too, old man. You went to ECW and IWA Mid South shows. You know about these chants and things like
that. I did, and I wasn't big into them back then either. Like, so I don't mind the chants. The thing that bothered me and the thing that bothers me, I guess, is that really, like, people are into the show, but they were into the show to, like, be part of the show. I guess it's hard to describe. There was no suspension of disbelief among this crowd at all. Like, it was all, like, in some ways it was impressive. I mean, like, when Big Cass and Enzo Amore came out, it was, they did their whatever their shtick at the start, and I felt like everybody but me and the crew that I was with knew every single word to what they were saying and was like saying it along. So
which is proof that you can't teach everybody.
Very well played, Mike.
Thank you.
So, but just, and again, I'm not being overly negative on the crowd. It was just very, the whole thing was very interesting because you had, they're clearly going for an indie vibe. That's the type of crowd that they're looking for. But then the show was.
But they're getting the Dick Young Men crowd with the chance in the we're going to entertain ourselves thing.
Yeah, to an extent. But then it's weird because then you had the people, you know, you had, you know, couples or just girls on their own that were you could tell were primarily there mostly as fans of like Bayley and the women's wrestlers. And so that was cool, too.
OK.
It's very interesting. It's a very schizophrenic product and kind of a schizophrenic crowd because it's still a very – like when you actually strip everything away about, okay, the chants, we're in Portage Theater, the fact that it's not the WWE main roster, the actual show itself was very WWE in the sense that you had a lot of very short matches. The opening match had a disqualification ending. The rest of the matches had, for the most part, clean finishes, but the show was really short. It was like 2.5 hours, I think, at the most.
Very sanitary type of show.
Yeah, very just, which was fine. I'm not criticizing it. I don't want to sound like I'm overly criticizing. I had a really good time, and it was a fun show. But I sort of what I said on Twitter that night was that it was basically an OVW undercard with an ROH style main event. Is the best way I can describe it.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I mean it was fine. The way I look at it,
how much did you spend on
really,
the ticket?
$25. I felt perfectly. We bought general admission, and we actually ended up pretty close to the stage as far as how far in general admission went before you got to the seats that people paid more for. So as a $25 show, I had absolutely zero problem with it. It was pretty much what I expected going in. I mean, we ended up getting to see Prince Devitt versus El Generico in the main event. So that, you know, and it was really good. It was not the type of absolute 100% blowaway match that I had imagined those two would put on for a takeover show. But it was, felt like it was a really, really good TV main event, which was fine. Again, like to me, the show, it felt like a house show length version of, kind of how I feel when I've watched the NXT TV show, and that it's an easy watch. It's a pro wrestling show. They're not trying to reinvent the wheel. They're not trying to, you know, it was a simple pro wrestling show that I walked away from pretty happy.
I won't say, cause I've never experienced the crowd down at Full Sail or anything like that. They, you know, I was never a big crowd chanter, at least with the vulgar chants and things like that, even as obnoxious as it was in like high school and college, because I didn't go to any ECW shows, so I went to almost all AEW and WCW shows, and there's so many kids there, and as much of an asshole as I didn't mind being, especially at that time of my life, I still couldn't do it because there are kids there, and I hate the response.
There wasn't much vulgar going on.
But I know, but hold on. I hate the response of people that, like, you know, well, you should know when you take your kids to a show or to a sporting event that's going to happen. To a sporting event, unfortunately, you have to cash it in, and you have to understand that because the amount of booze and assholism that goes around sports. At a wrestling show, I don't. And maybe I was never with that. And now that I'm older and have a kid, I really kind of don't want to hear it. Now, a funny one, a funny chant. I don't care who you are. You know, and there are times that there are good ones, but it does get to be pushed over the line sometimes. And it may just be my age. So I think, you know, my issue with the chants and stuff like that is just, if you're not there, I can understand if you're there because of the pack mentality, but sometimes it doesn't come across on TV. And when it's criticized, it's not because we're criticizing all of it, or at least me. I'm not criticizing chants or the live experience. It's just, hey, guys, you know, we're not there with you, and it's not translating, and it does kind of get annoying sometimes. So
yeah, I mean, it can be good and bad. I guess just that.
Also, get the fuck off my lawn.
Well, that for sure. I guess I don't mind chants sometimes. I think just the thing that I wasn't prepared for going to the show was just how, like, when I go to a wrestling show, obviously I've been a wrestling fan for, you know, I'm 34 years old. I've been a wrestling fan since I was 4 years old, 3 years old, actually. So I get what wrestling is. But when I go to a wrestling show, I like to suspend disbelief and get into it like I'm watching something that is akin to a sporting event that I don't know the outcome to, and I'm, you know, like, I want it to be fun, but I also, you know, I'm
you're watching a movie because WWE makes movies.
Oh yes, they also create smiles or whatever. But I'm, you know, I'm you kind of want to lose yourself in it, and it was not really possible to do that with this crowd just because it was just so, and even I don't know, even the show itself, like, it was, the show was good, but there were maybe only two matches on the entire card that weren't, like, didn't have a lot of comedy starting each match, which was, I don't know, that, I guess that was something I wasn't fully prepared for either. Like, I think the Devitt match didn't really have any comedy, and the Apollo Crews and the absolute black hole of anything interesting that is Baron Corbin.
Ouch.
That match really didn't have any comedy. Outside of that, the show was a little wackier than I expected, which is fine. It just wasn't necessarily what I thought going in. But no,
a lot of people like him. I think he's improved greatly over the last year. I mean, I think
that's interesting then, because I mean, he was not the worst professional wrestler I've ever seen, but compared to some of the other people on the card, just like no connection to the crowd. Like, it just, when I watched him, I felt like I was like tapping the upper left button, like for a taunt in like No Mercy for N64. It was kind of weird.
You're giving him N64. I thought you were going to reduce him to like WCW Nitro PS2 status, where he's going to be
backstage assault.
He'll be teaming up with like Bobby Blaze or something like that in the create a wrestler mode. I look, Baron Corbin, I was not sure how they were going to try to add another layer to the brooding type of character that he was, and the athlete who has been given everything and feels as though he should just walk in and feels entitled. I thought that was a good spin that they put on things. I think he has improved greatly. I don't like him as much as I think a lot of people do, or think he's improved as much as a lot of people do, and I'm not exactly sure about his future on the main roster or anything like that, but hey, he's a big guy, and we'll have to see him as the heavy for somebody. I can absolutely see him in the main event at WrestleMania. And no, don't see that one yet, but you never know what can happen. Finn Balor, I guess the biggest thing also I should ask you about is that everybody talked about was Finn worked heel. Now, as somebody that...
That's an over...
Okay, because as somebody that had a chance to see him a lot as a heel, you know, what was the deal with that?
This was not Bullet Club Finn Balor. This was, to me, the way I would describe it is this was Finn Balor of Prince Devitt. He basically worked in this match the way when Bret Hart would wrestle another face, Bret would work sort of heelish. That was sort of what he was, where I thought he was at in this match. He was not, and there was not back
not to the level of like Dory Funk Jr., like, you know, with the hair pull at the 45 minute mark, you know, not that heel.
I just thought it was, I mean, obviously pretty much every match, even a face versus face match, someone takes a bit more of the heel role in it. Like I said, Bret Hart was a master at that. And clearly El Generico, Sami Zayn, is not going to be the guy in a face versus face match to be heel most often, and so Devitt sort of filled that role. But no, it was not the Bullet Club Prince Devitt by any stretch.
I love Alexa Bliss.
Oh, yes. No, that was the other thing I was going to say, that the thing I do really like about NXT and the thing that I credit them for
is Alexa Bliss's hotness.
Well, yes, there's that, but just that was actually, I'd say, probably the high point of the crowd, in that, for one, everybody loved Bayley. Like, oh my God, was she absurdly over, which is great. But just no stupidity from the crowd in that match. I actually, having just gone to a Shimmer show a few months earlier, I was very interested to see how the WWE/NXT crowd would approach or would take, you know, women's wrestling in a live setting. And it really felt no different than the crowd at the Shimmer show that I went to, which, you know, which I said before when we did that show a few months ago, that the crowd was great at that Shimmer show, and it was very similar for that match. So thought that was interesting. The women's tag match that they had after the intermission was nowhere near
How red
as good.
Is Eva Marie?
I was going to say green, but I guess red from a visual standpoint works as well. That match was
the true heat magnet of the.
Oh my God! No, I get like the second that she stepped in the ring at any point, just the anticipation of her getting a tag, people were booing vociferously. That was pretty impressive, actually. I'll give both the crowd and her credit for that. I had never seen.
God, maybe
Naya
really can be this generation's Missy Hyatt. Honest to God.
I had never seen that Nia Jax or Nia Jax. I didn't catch how the name was pronounced, but she was actually, pretty good, kind of in like a Jessica Havoc type of way.
That Clubberin was also my and first
time. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I've never seen Carmella before. And then
Enzo's woman.
Yeah. And then, she teamed with, is it
Peyton Royce?
Royce. She's one of Lance's students, right? Was she Tennille?
No, that was Emma, wasn't it?
Oh, Jesus, yeah. Then what was Peyton Royce's name before she went to WWE?
Oh, God. I'd have to look at it, because there were the two that signed at the same time, and I always mix up the
names. There's her and Jesse McKay.
Yeah, I mixed their names, and I can't remember.
Jesse McKay is Billy Kay.
That was very... And Peyton Royce is, what, the tarantula? What is her deal? What's the line with the legs or whatever?
Oh, I have no idea.
She's got some gimmicks for that. Or the Venus flytrap, that's what it is.
Oh, okay. She did a hell of a top rope flying crossbody, though. Like, ridiculously good. So that was my takeaway from that match. But it was, yeah, I mean, it was a fun show. I was really impressed by Apollo Crews, UHA Nation. He was awesome.
How was Ty Dillinger?
Oh, my God, that match.
I hope my man has got a job forever. I like Ty Dillinger.
Oh, I was not impressed. I mean, but that's the type of guy, that's the type of wrestler that you would be a fan of.
Ty Dillinger is our generation's George South.
I thought he was NXT's Mike Bennett.
No. Although he's a perfect 10 now, isn't he?
I don't see how you get the George South comparison. Because
he's a guy that just, he's not going to be, he has good matches with guys, but he's relatively nondescript. He's just there. I could see him working three times in a night for NXT if somebody's car breaks down under a hood, the same way George South would, and he's going to linger forever. And
see, I love George South, so you're
somebody's going to be asking, like, somebody will be like, you know, hey, I talked to this guy Ty Dillinger, and he said he worked with like Finn Balor, who was just like that ever happened, and you'd have to look it up and go, yeah, I'll be damned, he did. It's like when Black Bart would say, hey, I wrestled Ric Flair on TV. No, you don't. I don't remember that. And then you see this tape from like Georgia in 1981. It's like, oh, I'll be damned he did. That's going to be Ty Dillinger.
Well, Ty Dillinger wrestled the Drifter. I can't remember.
Was that dude
name,
really
but...
sitting at the bar?
Huh?
I could have sworn about, like, I don't know if I can't even remember if this was true or not now, but just the thought of it made me laugh where the dude was at the bar, you know, the drift, you know, had the guitar on the back and then turned around and came to the ring.
Oh, at the show this past weekend? I have no idea. I mean, he came through the entranceway at the afternoon
show. Damn it,
show.
I hope that was the case. I can't even remember if that was a true story or just now I want it.
Oh, I wish it would have been. It would have made it more interesting. the Drifter, for one, he looks like if you kind of smash down a little bit, Tyler Black, a nice brand new acoustic guitar and like $300 jeans.
Well, he's a drifter that just
like he must really have just started drifting. Like he must have like I in my world, I'm guessing he was like working at like the
drifting in Beverly Hills.
Yeah, like working the stock exchange or something, and like a month ago lost a job, hasn't been able to shave, but still has a really nice $300 pair of jeans.
Well, typical of this generation's millennials, they come for money. You know, mommy and daddy will go to Nordstrom's and buy them the $300 pair of jeans and the sadly ripped t-shirt to for you to drift around in.
Yeah, I guess that's one of the other interesting things about NXT is you've got some people who are like you've got great, great world class wrestlers like Devitt and Generico. Even though it wasn't like a pay per view level match, it was still great. Even though crowd was a little bit annoying during the match at times, it was great. There was nothing bad you could say about that match. So you've got guys like that that are, you know, maybe two of the top 10 wrestlers in the world, and then you've got really, really green wrestlers who like their gimmicks are fully formed, but they're very, very very basic, almost creator wrestlers.
Where do you come down on the Dash and Dawson?
What's that?
Where do you come down on Dash and Dawson?
I really wanted to like them. I like their sort of like proto Brainbusters gimmick, and they did some cool stuff. There were some really funky botches in that match. One spot where I don't even really blame it on them, but there was a spot where I actually don't remember which one was doing it, but basically, you know, the spot where a guy will go for a springboard and the guy on the outside will sort of pull him down so he can't get to the top rope and he'll crash down to the floor. Well, that happened, but the guy that was on the outside that was supposed to pull him down didn't pull him down, but he still fell as if he had gotten pulled down.
Ow.
So that was a little funky, and there are a few other miscommunication issues. But I mean, I'm always a sucker for dudes that work an old school tag team type of gimmick, and it was refreshing to see two wrestlers in one match that basically had Arn Anderson builds.
And trying to go both for his mustache and beard too, aren't they?
Yeah, a little bit. So yeah, I didn't mind them. I don't know how experienced they were. I don't know sort of what their level is. I'm not a big Enzo and Cass guy, so I'd like to see them in there with other guys. But they were fine.
Well, hopefully everybody is still listening to this. Like you say, we are going to do a short show. Hopefully by the time we do next week's show or coming up here, probably taped next Sunday morning, we'll do another show.
And we'll have some Fantasticomania to look at. That the New Japan World Fantasticomania shows are, I believe, the 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. So we'll at least have the shows on the 22nd, 23rd.
Yeah, and then I think by that time, and we'll have to see what happens, but the Observer Newsletter Awards, year-end awards, should be happening. And actually, like every other year, I forget to turn in a ballot because it gets to be too late, or I just try to – I obsess too much over what's going to be match of the year, and I just throw my hands up and say, the hell with it. I don't care. But I actually got one done this year. I got the Voices of Wrestling Top 20 thing is almost done as well too, so maybe those results will be out and we'll have something more to talk about too, in addition to Fantasticomania as well, and what's gonna,
well, hopefully the
shake
the
out of the Royal Rumble as well too, I guess, if we hear anything, because if again we'll know some results on Monday if we record then, and if we do a Sunday show, it'll be taped in advance of the Royal Rumble, but maybe we'll have some information on that as well.
Yes, and hopefully by then the Stardom show from the 17th will have surfaced by then.
Oh yeah, and this I had heard good things about it before his injury, but Akiyama and Suwama for the Triple Crown. It was a good match. It was a, you know, in a way it was a little bit refreshing in that these are two older guys out there who are not
Suwama's not that old.
Well, I know, but I mean Akiyama is, but it was wrestled a little bit more where you're watching a main event of a world championship match where it's not like all guns blazing all the time as we've gotten used to. And I mean, and I mean that in a positive way, both ways.
This wasn't like Goto Ishii.
This isn't Okada and Tanahashi. This is not, you know, Mochizuki and Shingo where it's a blood feud, you know, or a real blood feud like a Sugiura and Suzuki, but it was a hard work, tough you know, main event where these guys actually look like they were not trying to concuss each other with headbutts and with forearms, which is a rarity in a big match nowadays, especially one that's supposed to mean as much as Akiyama and Suwama was supposed to and did. And it was a good win for Suwama. He took the belt. I would say, you know, a really good match, 3.5-star match maybe, you know, if you had to attach snowflakes to it. But it was a really good match. If you get the chance, it wasn't super long or anything like that. I think it was about 20-25 minutes, so you won't kill your time seeing it. And it's going to be the last Suwama match we're going to see for quite some time, because he ruptured his Achilles a couple nights later. So it looks like they're going back to Akiyama, or at least the title.
Oh, no, Zeus versus Kento Miyahara in a decision match.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, because Zeus came out at the end and you know, there was going to be some sort of challenge. It didn't look like he was figured into the challenge at the end, but he's obviously in the decision match for the belt. So probably be watching a bunch of other stuff as well. There's a bunch of women's stuff that's out there that I don't even know if I want to see. You know, I've been so stuck on Stardom over the last year. There's a Reina show that's out. There's a couple others as well, too. So I might cherry pick off of them, and we'll talk about those coming up here next week, too.
Yep. And then the only other thing I want to mention briefly is just another question that came in on Twitter, at Adam Mike B-A-N, at Adam Mike Ban. Mattman1624, Matthew E. Allen, a longtime listener to the show, says, completely off topic of everything, but what's the origin of you guys calling Tetsuhito Takaiwa Bobby Brain Killer? That one goes way back. That actually predates even us doing this show together. Actually, really sad story, but Tetsuhito Takaiwa, literally, and I mean this in the actual definition of the word, literally, nearly killed Naohiro Hoshikawa back in October of 2004, with many, many stiff moves, most notably a pretty horrific clothesline, I believe, possibly a Death Valley Driver or Brainbuster as well. And so it's specific to that incident, from which Hoshikawa has never fully recovered. He has a brain injury, never fully recovered, but also just in general, one of the, I would say, most irresponsibly stiff wrestlers of this era. Like, think what everyone always freaks out about, like, oh my God, if she is killing people, he's so irresponsible. Like, that's actually what Takaiwa is slash was.
So, yeah, not a fan. And of course, I just never liked him because of the three men in black, of Otani, Kanemoto, and Takaiwa. I just didn't like Takaiwa.
And with that, not only is Tetsuhito Takaiwa Bobby Brain Killer, he also is the killer of this radio show, because there's about 3 minutes after that that me and Mike recorded that came out completely garbled digitally. So I was getting ready to upload the show and saw that, figured, no, that can't go up online, especially for a free show. So in any event, what you're hearing now is me close out this show. Thanks for listening. Again, if you enjoyed this show, hopefully if you're not a subscriber, go check out the website at WrestlingObserver.com and subscribe. We will be back next week, most likely next Sunday morning. We'll be recording another show, and then be on the lookout for probably free shows once a month as well from us. So I think that's all. We'll talk to you next week, and thanks for listening.